just trust that I'm gonna get it. If I don't, they're gonna let me know. But to be truly present with them and listen with your heart and not just with your mind or your analytical brain. You gotta listen from your heart.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life. Hello to our listeners and welcome to The Other Chair. My name is James Dykman. Today's guest is Hansa Patel, an attorney, mediator, and teacher passionate about serving the underprivileged community while exploring new ways to empower her clients to resolve conflict. Her mediation practice allows clients to choose how to engage with conflict, co-create resolutions, and transform relationships. Hansa teaches mediation in the United States, Canada, and Africa, including integrating mindfulness skills into conflict resolution, and has a great deal of experience working with clients in the digital space, which is the subject of our episode today. Hello, Hansa, and welcome to The Other Chair.
Hi, James. Thank you for having me here today with you.
Thank you so much for being here. One of the biggest topics that's come up, especially among our CUC members, is around how to mediate in the digital landscape. And for some people who are newer to mediation or have only jumped into it in the last couple of years, it's a much more native experience, while more commonly, people who have been mediating for decades are having to adapt to this change as a lot of mediation practice goes online. So I was wondering if you could start by just giving an overview of your personal experience with mediation in the digital space and how you've experienced that so far.
So it's new to me too, to be honest with you, James, and I'm learning new things all the time. And I transitioned from litigation and over to mediation work. And ever since we've been in a pandemic, so all my experience has been with online mediation, online teaching, online mindfulness practices. So I feel like I'm learning as I go about how to really be with people online and how to deal with all the technical issues that could come up too.
I understand that in your mediation practice, you use the understanding-based approach. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Yes. So this is the understanding approach is instead of just focusing on when we have conflict and focusing on what positions people have is, and often we talk about, oh, understanding what people's positions are, but now we're talking about a little deeper than that, which is really understanding each other, what is important to one another and why. And then moving from that space to create a resolution together. And to me, the understanding model is very profound on how it helps us understand conflict and resolve conflict just as well. I don't want to practice mediation any other way. James, ever since I've come across it, I don't see any other way because it really helps me understand me, but also the people I work with and help them understand each other.
Sounds like the personal connection between parties in conflict and the mediator really relies a lot on being in the same room. How do you find teaching or using that model in a digital space? How do you maintain that level of connection?
And that's a really good question, James. And I can't say that, I can say that initially I really struggled with that because I'm a note taker and I get nervous that I'm going to miss something, that I'm not going to get it. And as a lawyer, you're trained for fact finding. And so I'm trying to make sure I get all the facts, you know, and I'm analyzing them. And one of our instructors from the center, Catherine Miller, had reminded me, put the pen down and just listen with your heart and really be present with people. You forget, someone will remind you what that fact was. Something is that critical, just ask again. And it took me, honestly, like 2 years to practice that, to let go of my pen, because I'm such a note taker. But I started to trust what Catherine had told me. And oh my God, it's magical. It is so magical to be present with who you're talking to and to really feel like I can see them and hear them and not have to write it down. And the memory just kicks in because you're so present on an intense level now that you don't need to worry about memorizing it. So I think that's my takeaway, to be honest with you, James, is to just trust that I'm going to get it. If I don't, they're going to let me know. But to be truly present with them and listen with your heart and not just with your mind or your analytical brain. You got to listen from your heart.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model.
It sounds like there could definitely be some advantages to the focus that working with someone online will force you into, but for people who've been mediating for a really long time, especially those who are struggling to transition to the digital space or simply can't give up taking notes or being able to prepare or use their hands, what sort of advice do you have for them to make that transition? Or are there any tips on how to do that at the same time without it being so obvious?
Yeah. Okay. So honestly, I find an opportunity to practice that is really important. So when I did my first 40-hour training from the center on mediation, I was matched up with a buddy that I really felt connected to. So she and I scheduled a time. We scheduled a time to practice that. What's it like to listen digitally on Zoom and connect with people? So once a week, she and I would meet. We'd practice looping together, understanding whatever's coming up for each other, and listening, truly listening with our heart. So I suggest the best thing you can do is practice it. Practice it with your loved ones, with your friends, with your colleagues. Just play with it.
Now, thank you for that. Let's say you're mediating with multiple people. You have a number of parties in the room or several people. How do you manage the flow of conversation if it's all going through Zoom and happening in the digital space?
Yeah. And you know, that is a tough thing to do, right, James, because there's a lot of happening on the screen. But like, for example, if I'm talking, whoever I'm talking to, I try to make sure on my computer that I put it on speaker mode. So whoever is talking, I am focusing on that person. I can see the face, I can see the body language, the facial expressions. And then on the top of my screen, I still have my eye where I quickly glance onto what's happening for everybody else too, so that I can kind of be aware of the reactions that might be happening in the room. But I definitely focus on the speaker. And so at the top right, for example, if your platform is Zoom, on the top right, usually it says view. So you can go from gallery mode to speaker mode. And I like to go to gallery mode when I need it to see everybody. Then I go to speaker mode when whoever's talking, because I want to be able to focus and really listen to the person talking.
Do you have an example of, and I know you're limited in the amount of detail that you can share, but do you have an example of an experience on Zoom when you were mediating or teaching mediation that went really well because you were using that platform? And then also, to prepare you, I'm going to ask you if you have an example of a time that it didn't go so well and how you ever overcame those challenges.
Yeah, I think that a time where I feel like online mediation works really well is when my two parties are not quite ready to be with each other physically in their space, right, together. And so it gives them some opportunity to be in a safe zone, whether it's in their own home or in their office, and mediate. They can still see the other person, yet still have a little distance. And so I find that Zoom can be great for that, and online mediations when people are not ready to be in the same room, or geographically, they're just far away, you know, and that tends to work really well. And there's multiple people involved and everybody's schedule is complicated. And then I find it to work really well when there's multiple parties. We've also done a lot of facilitation of large meetings with board members and members in the community. And that's great with Zoom, when everybody can be present and see each other, especially during the pandemic when we weren't having in-person contact.
And how about a time when you ran into a lot of trouble?
I think you know about that, James. So I was doing a webinar with Gary Friedman and super excited that I had this opportunity, you know, to have this dialogue with him about the inner V, for those of us who are familiar with it, or just, you know, exploring our own reactions and judgments when we work with mediation. So we were going to talk about that. And in the middle of the training, my connection was really weak. And I was panicking like, oh my God, is this really happening to me right now? No, this can't happen. And I had to start thinking of alternatives, like what can I do right now? And so I jumped off my laptop for a minute. I muted it and I tried to log in on my cell phone in another room. And I was able to jump back in. And then over time, I went back to my desktop and say, okay, let's see if the connection is better there now. So then once I realized the connection was better, I went back to my laptop. Because then I can see faces, you know, on our cell phones, we can't see everybody, right? I want to be able to see who I'm talking to. So what I learned that day was a lot, and I'm still learning from that, to be honest with you, James. The biggest one was, I think that something was running on the background of my computer. So what I mean by that is, like, if when I'm starting a Zoom and I don't turn off all the other apps that are available on my computer, like my music, my text, my PowerPoint, my Word document, if all of those are not closed, it's running in the back, you know, and that gets in the way of a clear connection to the app or the platform that I'm currently actively using. So turning those off is really important. And that day I had my PowerPoint open and my Word, because I was looking at my notes and I had PowerPoints that I wanted to use in the webinar. So I think it was taking up some of the juice, because the minute I went to my cell phone, I didn't have any struggles there. So I would really, really remind folks, turn off all the other apps in the background before you get started, because then you can have all the juice in your connection go straight to the platform you're using. And I think I was talking to my husband, he's got a tech background on this, and he gave me a really good example that I would love to share, James, which is, like, it's like you're on the freeway. And when you're using one platform, it's like you're the only one driving. Nothing is in the way. You can go at the speed you want. There's no stop signs. There's no signals. You're just driving. But when other apps are open, every app represents a car on that freeway now. So something gets in the way, you got to slow down. There's other cars nearby, you got to pay attention to those, because they're taking up space on the road. And so now you got to work together. Versus if you close them, those cars are off the freeway and it's just you driving and you have a better connection.
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients.
Speaking of working together, just as mediators who have been practicing a long time may be new to this technology, so too may people who are seeking mediation. And so, do you have any advice for setting some ground rules or checking in on understanding of using this technology before you begin?
Yes. You know, I always, whenever I'm doing the mediations online, I check in with the parties to see what their experience is with online communication and video usage, and see if they're comfortable with it. And if they're not, I always want to give them a sort of an opportunity or a test drive. I say, let's set up a time. I want to make sure your connection, my connection is good. You know how to use the Zoom. You know how to turn off other things like chat, or you know how to turn your video on. And we have a clear picture of you. Like, being able to see who you were talking to is really important. Right. So I want to make sure they have a good camera and that we can hear them well. I recently was at a mediation where I could barely hear one of the parties, and it was really dark because I think there was a lot happening emotionally. And They had a really black screen, had all black on, the head was down. I can barely hear this person. So it's hard to talk about things that are happening and conflict if you can't hear. So testing audio, testing the visual, right, the video, and just giving people a chance to make sure they know how to use the platform.
So you bring up an interesting point about a mediation that you had previously, and I know that you just shared about some challenges that you have when teaching, but what happens when you have similar challenges during a mediation session and it's not with you, it's something that a participant is having, or maybe in this situation, they're keeping themselves in the dark or they're speaking low, things that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do in person to kind of cloud, you know, your feelings or make it so there's more of a barrier between you and the other people. How do you overcome that and still be effective as a mediator and serve your clients?
I think that it's a great opportunity for everyone to problem solve together, right? And it's a great opportunity where I can communicate to the person who's kind of whether keeping themselves away a little bit, inviting them, trying to figure out what they need to feel supported so they can be present, right? And checking in with them. And in that particular situation, I kept inviting the person to raise the voice, put the volume up, making sure that it wasn't a technical issue or more maybe an emotional issue, and working with that person. But if it's a technical issue, it could be a great opportunity for the other party who may have some experience to say, hey, try this. Maybe we might need to log off again and come all back together and see if we get a better connection. Or, you know what, maybe we just need to turn the videos off for a little bit and go by audio. But I think that if one person turns off their video, I like everyone to turn their video off. And if one person has, if we're all using their video, we all need to be able to use it. So I try to troubleshoot one-on-one, but also invite the other party to troubleshoot. Right? It's a great opportunity to come together now and see if they can resolve something. And there's times where it just doesn't work and we reschedule. And it's okay.
So it sounds like you have a number of different approaches that you take in maintaining trust and connection with individuals in a digital space that some would argue, especially those with a more traditional approach or who've been doing it for much longer, that is hard to maintain on Zoom. And so can you talk a little bit more about other ways that you can build trust and improve connection among participants in the digital space?
I think, James, my biggest take experience is that in order to build trust, you've got to listen. You have to listen and actively listen. And you have to listen and observe nonverbal cues also, right? Like eye contact, body language. Are they leaning in to the screen? Are they sitting far back? You know, are they distracted with their cell phones or what's going on for them? So listening, actively really listening, expresses that you care, that you're trying to understand what's going on for them. Then the other thing I think is really important is paying attention, having some awareness about what's coming up for you, right? Like, this person is telling this story, and is it sort of like reminding me of something about my life? You know, that therefore I'm leaning towards this person or I'm kind of leaning away from this person, right? Like, our own stories and the stories they're telling kind of get sometimes distracting. So you have to be aware. I have to be aware of what's coming up for me as I'm hearing the stories from the other parties and be able to separate that. But okay, this is my stuff and I want to handle this, but I'm going to need to do that later. This is not my story. And stay curious to what's happening to this person, because we might have similar fact patterns, but not similar emotions, right? Or reactions to it. So really having self-awareness of what's happening for me internally as I'm externally listening to the parties. The balance of the two, I find, is really important for building connection.
Now, you mentioned nonverbal cues, things to pay attention to when the camera is on, but what happens in a situation like you mentioned where the camera's off, everyone agrees to keep it off, or it has to be for technical limitations? What sort of cues do you look out for? How do you manage that in an audio only environment?
I think for that situation, you're listening for the tone, right? Someone's talking really fast. someone's not talking, someone's pausing, someone is, I am paying attention to how they're speaking. Yeah. Are they talking over each other? You know, and really feeling not heard by other one, or including not heard by myself. And whether the emotions are high, you know, you can say the same thing in so many different tones, right? And still make your point. And that tells me where they are in the struggle and the conflict just as well, right? If they're hijacked emotionally or not, are they able to self-regulate a little bit or not? So I'm really listening for the tone.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, discounts to our basic and advanced training programs, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model.
So let's say that you're a mediator, you've been in the field for a really long time. Using computers is just never a thought. Now we've got Zoom, and in many cases now that's the only option, but you're just not adjusting. This is never going to work. This is not the right way to do it, but that's all that's available, and it's in the best interest of the client. So what advice do you have for especially long-term professionals who are operating this environment and they're just not comfortable with it, and they may need help adjusting even if they're just resistant and that's not going to change?
I think, James, I would really try to explore that conversation. Like, what's in the way here? Is it technical information? You know, is it personal information stuff that's happening? Why is there a resistance to the online mediation stuff? You know, I think that exploring that. And then if it's something like, I just don't know how to use Zoom and I'm not comfortable with it, and therefore I need some education around it or training, you know, set up a call with a friend, you know, and say, let's have lunch together or have tea together. And I just want to learn how to do this. Set up some groups, you know, I'm going to put you in a breakout room, see what that looks like. I'm going to send you a text on it. I'm going to show how to have a background screen because I'm sitting in my bedroom today. You know, play with it. Talk to someone you trust who might have a little bit more information and can maybe guide you a little bit and practice it. And the other thing is, I'd be curious, like, what's getting in the way for me? What's the struggle there, right? On a personal level, it's just, I want to learn new stuff. I like it in person because I can read people better. I can read the room better. And I think it's okay to have a style, right? And a preference, as long as we take into account of the parties we're working with as to what their preferences are too, right? I think it's okay. It's okay to like say, this is not my way and this is not how I like to do it. And let the parties know that I prefer in person, but if we need to try it a different way, I'm still open to it.
Great. Thank you. Do you have any other advice for our listeners or anything they should keep in mind as they are navigating the digital landscape that we find ourselves in now?
Let me think about it. I'm going to take a pause and think about it myself. And you know, that's the thing. Take a pause. I think my only advice would be don't panic and just take 3 breaths. It's okay to say, you know, I'm going to take a moment here. I'll be back. I'm going to take a little bathroom break. Everybody turn off your screen and settle back into whatever's happening for yourself and just check in. And you can invite the parties to do the same, which is we're going to pause and I invite everybody to just take 3 breaths.
Wonderful. Thank you, Hansa, for being here today.
Thank you, James, for this conversation and opportunity to learn more and more every day about technology and how to mediate.
Hansa Patel has worked with families in conflict for the past 20 years and has fiercely advocated for abused and neglected children or parents' rights in the Juvenile Dependency Court. She also facilitates a peer-to-peer restorative justice court to support first-time youth offenders while serving on the Center for Understanding and Conflict's Board of Directors.
Thank you to today's guest for being with us today and to our CUC Connect members, whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the understanding-based model at www.understandinginconflict.org.